opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
My name is Erin Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And you'll hear it several times today, but you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. That's Bill's job. Sorry. I just did Bill's job.
That's
it's going to be one of those days.
It is.
So, kind of a new little snippet I thought I'd add just for your amusement. So, I had a relative who died, and we were kind of going through things at her house, and in the kitchen they had the White House cookbook. And it's like, really? The White House cookbook? I didn't know they had a cookbook. So then we flipped it open, and this particular version was from 1916, but it was originally copyrighted in 1887.
I thought it was 1861.
No.
No?
I'm looking right at it, 1887. So, to the wives of our presidents, those noble women who have graced the White House and whose names and memories are dear to all Americans, this volume is affectionately dedicated by the author. The funny part about the White House cookbook is that, it only has some stuff to do with cooking.
Yeah.
Because we were thinking it's recipes, right? So, I come home and I go, hey, Bill, look what I brought, you know, a little piece of history, you know? So we start looking at it. Well, it has like remedies. It has remedies that were, a thing back at that time. And so I thought, you know, this would be a kind of a fun thing to share because every now and then you think, well, holistic medicine really is off the rails. At this particular time, holistic medicine was a little bit off the rails.
Just a little bit.
Because we stumbled across relief from asthma. Which is something that I have, so I was like, well, huh, how did they think you cured asthma at the turn of the century? Sufferers from asthma should get a muskrat skin and wear it over their lungs with the fur side next to the body. It will bring certain relief.
That's important to have the fur side down.
Kind of the fur side of your muskrat skin down. So, you know, if you know anybody who's struggling with asthma.
Yeah, go find a muskrat skin.
I'll let you know if I find a muskrat skin, and then I'll have to let you know if it works. But anyway, I just thought it was pretty funny. Somehow that made it into the White House cookbook. So they also had, like, recipes for state dinners and all sorts of stuff. It was pretty neat. I should probably scan some of the pages and post them. But kind of made me laugh. So, yeah, if you're sitting on a muskrat skin or your relative dies and you stumble across one, it could have had asthma.
That's right. That's what it was for. That's
mystery why they solved.
Had it. It's not to wear on your head.
Oh, my God. So, I've kind of an awkward segue, but our first hour here is with Victor Gomez, who's the executive director of Citizens Against Lawsuit Abuse. Who wouldn't be against lawsuit abuse? Sad, you have to have a whole organization for it. And we all know there is tons of lawsuit abuse. So he is a Northern California native with a wealth of experience in local, state, and federal policies, both in the Monterey Bay Area, which, okay, I got to clear this up. That isn't Northern California, but okay. And the greater Silicon Valley and the San Francisco Bay Area, still not Northern California. There's 3 hours of the state left over. So, Victor, you might want to change that a little bit, or we'll have to continue to highlight that. Born and raised in Hollister, California, that's the middle, he is the former mayor of his hometown and recently completed his second term as a city council member. And as someone on the Planning Commission, I feel your pain. I blundered into that myself. As the son of a mayor and a sheriff, Victor has always held a passion for politics, community, and public service. And after immigrating to Hollister from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, his parents and older siblings lived in farmworker housing in San Benito County. After years of hard work, they were able to purchase a home in a low-income development in West Hollister, where Victor was raised. He attended local elementary schools and San Benito High School. Then he got his degree in aviation and became a private pilot. Now that's handy. You could actually see Northern California, Victor. Just you scurry on up here and we've got a spare room. Victor and his wife purchased a franchise restaurant where they owned and operated it for nearly 10 years. Didn't say what kind of restaurant though, Victor. We have questions. Cutter restaurant. What was it?
I used to own pizza franchises.
Ah, I love pizza. That's awesome, too. You could bring that in the plane. In 2008, in the midst of running a business, Gomez ran for and won a seat on the Hollister City Council, and at the age of 31, he became one of the youngest mayors to serve the city of Hollister. Since then, he served 8 years on the San Benito Transportation Authority, Hollister Airport Land Use Commission, Gang Prevention Policy Board, bet that was illuminating, the Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments, Hollister Redevelopment Agency, and also the president of the League of California Cities, Monterey Bay Chapter, advocating for sound policies for municipal government at the state level. And I will let people go from there on that. But you've done a whole lot of different things. All of them, I mean, not all of them. The pizza thing obviously was a departure, but policy related, right? So why the focus on policy and now into the lawsuit abuse? What was the kicker there?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Really,
well, of
really
course.
Great to be with you this afternoon. Honestly, what drove me there was my experience in business.
Yeah.
And coming to an early realization, I mean, I became a franchisee at 25 years old, and immediately I felt I almost felt like this hatred coming from Sacramento. You know, if you own a small business, and, you know, some people don't consider franchise a small business, I do. I'm a local person and had my franchises, and even though I had to pay a franchise fee, still I was a local guy owning a local pizza shop. And I just felt this constant attack coming from Sacramento. And, after many years of owning and operating the franchise, I felt this lack of attention in addressing the need for advocacy for small business in California. Large corporations, they're going to have their ability, they're going to have their resources, right, to hire their attorneys and do what they need to do. But as an independent and even as a small franchise owner, you don't have those abilities. You don't have that ability to hire a high-powered attorney to go lobby for you in Sacramento. And so really our goal and what drew me to work with California CALA, the Citizens Against Lawsuit Abuse, was really the advocacy. I saw these small business owners from all over the state, from Redding down to Sacramento and all the way down to San Diego, just continuing to be hit with these frivolous lawsuits, especially around these ADA lawsuits. So really it's just a passion, right? A passion that I have. And, I don't have a big army. It's just myself and another part-time employee that do this work, but it's good work. And look, if we don't want our businesses to continue to flee the state of California, we really need folks stepping up and advocating. And I'm happy to be doing it for these small business owners, at least on this topic.
I think anybody in and small business, some of the businesses, you're not just talking about one or two people. Anything? What do you consider small business?
Because generally for me, I see small business as 50 employees or less.
Yep. Okay.
That's really I think the core of small business, and many of them actually are much much less than that. More like 10, sometimes less employees.
Right. Yeah, and they and a lot of things are just, I mean, crazy and onerous, and sometimes the regulatory things kind of compete with one another, so it's not even clear how you get out from under it.
It's nonstop, and so this work that we're doing here to try to advocate for small business in California, it's an uphill battle. We are facing a political group, a political action committee, and a lobbying group that is relentless, right? The trial attorneys and trial bar have a ton of money. They have a lot of money to combat what we're trying to do. I mean, just over the last 2 years, we see these, right? We see these advertisements on TV. We see these billboards everywhere, right? That saying, hey, you've been in an accident, call us. They're spending, over the last 2 years, they've spent over $400 million on advertising just in California, over 4 million ads over the last 2 years. And so they know, hey, look, we have an opportunity here to keep slapping small business around, and if they go out of business, we don't care. Somebody else will pop up, and we'll put them out of business too, right? That's really what they like to do. Not only that, they control the politicians, right? I mean, campaign contributions are insane. I mean, over $25 million in contributions over the last 6 years to Sacramento politicians, including the governor, including Attorney General Bonta, who's supposed to be protecting us, but takes money from the trial bar so they can continue to hurt us. and then plenty of state legislators and, you know, senators and assembly members who are taking these dollars. And that's usually who we see the resistance from, right? Oddly enough, we see it from, these folks that are taking these major contributions. Apparently they say that it doesn't influence their decision making. We don't believe that one bit. They continue to take money, and they continue to side with the trial attorneys, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's you know, what I see is, you know, a lot of these small businesses, they'll get hit with these, you know, maybe not necessarily frivolous lawsuits, but kind of silly lawsuits, and they never go to trial. They settle out of court, and I think that's a big part of the problem is all you have to do is file a lawsuit, and you'll get something out of it. I think that's the part that we really need to change is stop making it so lucrative to settle out of court. If you file a lawsuit and you lose, it should cost you. And you know, small business, you're right, that puts them out of business when they have to defend themselves. And even if they settle out of court, their insurance costs go up. I mean, it's just kind of a vicious circle. Is that what you see?
It is, absolutely. I mean, look, I have family members that are, that deeply benefit from the Americans with Disabilities Act. We are fully supportive of ADA law. We think it's important for everybody to have access to these establishments. And candidly, so do the business owners, right? When you're a business owner, you don't want to turn somebody away or you don't want to stop somebody from entering your establishment because the ramp in front of your establishment may be the wrong incline. Maybe somebody stole the ADA parking plaque, out of the front of the parking space. No, we want to make it as easy as possible. Everybody's money's green. Look, at the end of the day, that's what we want as business owners. We're there to generate a profit, and in many cases, especially in small businesses, my wife and I were operators, owner operators, and at one point when my daughter turned 16, she was working in our store, right? In a lot of these cases, it's family businesses. So we want to make sure that we're thriving, that we're successful, and that we're turning a profit. But you're absolutely right. What ends up happening here is somebody will file one of these ADA lawsuits, and we call them frivolous, not because the intent is wrong, it's their intent specifically to shake the company or the business down for money without correcting the problem, right? So if you settle out of court, and or even if you don't settle, actually if you don't settle out of court and you try to challenge them, which will cost you tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, it never fixes the issue. A perfect example is a toilet paper holder or dispenser in a restroom. If it's an inch too high or too low, you could get sued for that.
Right? Oh my gosh,
well,
you're kidding.
We want to make sure that it's fixed, right? I mean, if it's really the intent of the trial attorney or the attorney who's filing the lawsuit, if it's really their intent to fix the issue, then let's fix the issue, right? Currently, we have this bill, SB 84, that's making its way through.
Oops. No, he's absolutely right, though. I mean, there's so many of these laws where people will come in, and we've seen it with this ADA laws. People will come in, they'll look around, they won't say a word to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then they'll leave, and the next thing you know, you get a letter from an attorney that says, hey, one of our clients or one of our folks was unable to access XYZ, and we're going to file a lawsuit. And still not there.
He was there and then got...
Yeah. But rather than send a letter and say, hey, there's a problem, and give the business an opportunity to remedy the situation. They just go for the lawsuit because they can get money. And he's right. They don't care if you fix it. They just want the money. And, I don't know. That just makes it really hard for small business to survive when you're constantly looking over your shoulder and, yeah, you have to do things right. You have to conduct business according to the law. But with so many laws being passed, it's almost impossible to stay on top of everything. And it's not just ADA. It's environmental. It's safety. It's all of these things that small business has to deal with. And if one little thing isn't right, here comes a lawsuit. Or here comes the state with a book, and they write you up, and it's $10,000 because somebody threw a can of oil in your dumpster that was, you know, a few drops of oil was still in it. So, hey, that's $10,000. Just write us a check. And things like that. I mean, you need to give people the opportunity to fix it before you go right to court with it. And I don't know, maybe that gets into tort reform. I don't know what the answer is there, but so many small businesses aren't given the opportunity.
Yeah, and this bill, as I was sharing with you, I mean, this bill that's running through the state legislature right now would allow 120 days before a lawsuit is filed. So if I do have something that needs to be corrected, again, if I need to repaint that parking stall blue because it faded, if I got to fix that incline on that ramp because for some reason it's not the right incline, it fixes the problem. So who benefits from that? The person that's disabled,
right?
They benefit from it. The trial attorneys don't benefit from it because they can't see you unless you don't fix it within 120 days, right? So the intent of these laws and this, you know, tort reform here that we're focused on, we think is a win-win for everybody, again, except for the trial attorneys and the trial bar, and they're not happy about it.
No, they don't really care. You're right. They don't care if you fix the problem. They just want their money. And the state's as guilty as anybody. I mean, they have so many regulations that are just ridiculous and fees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to register this and you have to license that. Heck, we have a guy that comes in once a year and inspects our air compressor that hasn't changed for 20 years. But he has to put his new seal of approval on it. And that's, you know, $150. And they want the check right then. And he comes in, he looks at it.
You have to pay him when they...
Oh, yeah, they want their money right now.
Eh?
Yeah, so you go ahead and give them a credit card or a check. It's usually a check.
Wow.
And
it's like the olden days when you got a speeding ticket, you just gave the cop the $20.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, if you're out of compliance, give the business an opportunity. Because, I mean, a lot of things are just very easily overlooked. And give them a chance to fix it and move on. But... gosh, all these rules and regulations. I mean, it's no wonder people are moving out of California.
Yeah, well, it's no wonder they don't want to run a business. Victor, we have to take a really quick break, and then hopefully we have solved all of our little communication issues. But going to hear about my attorney Bernie for you during the break, because I looked for some good law songs. It was kind of a fun little search last night. So our guest is Victor Gomez. He is with California's Citizens Against Lawsuit Abuse California. And we'll be right back. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, so I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, so I always do what Bernie recommends. I am blessed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need a lawyer for. Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we sue, we sue. Bernie says we sign, we sign.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Are you looking to take your business to the next level? Don't let staffing issues or HR red tape stop you from growing. The most successful businesses are those that have mastered their HR and staffing needs, and they have done it with O2 Employment Services. Finding qualified help is harder and more expensive than ever. HR regulations are getting more and more complex and confusing. For over 20 years, O2 has been providing the foundation successful businesses need to grow, assisting employers with their HR, payroll, workers' comp, benefits and staffing. Partnering with O2 gives you the expertise you need to manage your business and employees. Outsourcing your HR and staffing is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity for successful businesses, and it is more affordable than you think. Let O2 show you how we can help you reduce your HR complexities, hire the right talent, and get back to growing your business. Call O2 today at 530-223-4674 or visit us online at o2es.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
When you serve me and I'll serve you, swing your partners or get screwed. Bring your lawyer and I'll bring mine. Get together, we could have a man. We're gonna play the sue me, sue you, blue.
In case that was an obscure reference, that was George Harrison with the Sue Me, Sue You Blues. So, Victor, it's kind of nice you're going to do something with this issue. You have a long list on here, and I did add them from your webpage. I stole it. So you have a lot of issues: jury service, access to health care, class action abuse, all those different things. And the abuse of Prop 65 lawsuits. Is that the one? I didn't actually read the detail. Is that the one where they say everything has cancer or causes cancer?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
These days, a list of over 1,000 chemicals now.
Yeah, I couldn't get a Franklin Covey. I needed a thing for my planner. But it was prohibited to come into the state of California because it may cause cancer. And I was like, really? It's a thing you put business cards in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you go now to the grocery store, any retail store, and everything has a cancer label on it. It's to the point, really, where folks just don't pay attention. And we've asked that. You know, we've actually done these, like, front-of-the-store interviews, right, with folks that are patronizing a certain store and say, hey, do you realize, what do you have in your bag, and what do you realize half of this stuff could cause cancer? They're like, no, we're just not, everything has the label now that it's really, for many folks, just kind of meaningless, right? And very unfortunate. Really, all it is just a hotbed for lawsuits, that as well.
The one you need to add is contains tree nuts. I have a very severe peanut allergy, but everything, and the gummy bears, could have a peanut allergy. You're like, really? Like, if you really didn't eat anything that could have potentially, been involved with a tree nut, the number of things in the grocery store are, you can count them on one hand. And I'm sure that's for lawsuits.
Yeah, it is. And, in this case here, a perfect example on Prop 65 is, in most cases, a $2,500 fine per day. for any manufacturer and product that you fail to put a label on. Settlements have ranged anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000 per item. And a lot of these are small manufacturers, right? They're California-based manufacturers that are making a small toy or, you know, whatever they may be making. These are not, you know, millionaire, billionaire companies. Again, small mom-and-pop type, you know, manufacturers. And California just creates that climate for it, you know. And not only that, but the attorneys are, the attorneys are the ones making the money. Just in 2024, there was over $20 million in settlements that were paid out in 2024 because of Prop 65 lawsuits. Out of that, you know, nearly $20 million, $17 million of that went to attorney fees.
Yeah.
$3 million actually went to the person who did it, right, who you know, claimed the lawsuit, right? So, again, you know, when you have that much money, 85% going to the trial attorneys instead of, you know, the person who supposedly suffered the issue, you know who's really making the money here.
Yeah, you always hear about these huge settlements that people get, but you never hear about how much they actually pocket. I mean, you're right. Most of it goes to attorneys.
Well, how many times have you sent in the postcard, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're in this class action, and you get a check in the mail for 45 cents.
Like, yeah.
Wow, really? That must have been a terrific
you're the big
winner.
Yeah, I won my lawsuit.
Yeah,
we showed
you
them.
Can tell who made the money there. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, but these notices just continue to, and it's really California that really is creating this sort of hotbed for it. I mean, the ADA law specifically. I mean, we're one out of 50 states, yet over 30% of the ADA lawsuits are filed in California.
Oh wow!
Right, and so it's the opportunity to create money because of the UNRRA Act here in California that created sort of the fine amount that is not found in other states outside of maybe New York, right? Another problem state, unfortunately, but you know, they created this climate, right, that you could sue anybody really for anything these days. But we're not giving up. Again, we're just going to continue to fight on the ADA front, as we were talking about. Over 30% of the nation's lawsuits in ADA are in California. This really does need to change. And as we discussed, you know, we don't see any problem with just saying, hey, give us a warning letter. Give us 120 days to fix that issue. Same thing can be applied to even Prop 65, right? Where you just say, hey, yeah, you made a mistake. There's over, you know, as a small business owner, there's, you know, 3,000 laws introduced every year, right, into the state assembly. As a small business owner, how many of us small business owners have time to sit down on January 1st and say, oh my gosh, I wonder how many bills the governor signed last year? And yes, let me go through those 1 to 3,000 bills. I have plenty of time.
Yeah, no, right. And how many of them apply to me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the tax code. You know, that is a ever-shifting set of goalposts there, but at least you can, if you want to, you know, hire an accountant, go to H&R Block. I mean, there are people who can navigate that for you. What would you advise a small business who just would kind of like to run their business and not maybe become a lawyer on the side?
Yeah. Well, specifically, again, you highlighted a few of the issues that small business owners face with Prop 65, specifically ADA lawsuit abuse. You know, another issue that many Californians still continue to deal with is the Sue Your Boss law. They call it the PAGA law, the Private Attorney General Act. There were some reforms on that, but unfortunately, PAGA lawsuits, these Private Attorney General Act lawsuits, still continue to hit.
What do you get to sue your boss for?
These are for small, you know, small technical infringements, like, you know, you get your electronic pay sub and your name is spelled incorrectly.
You would sue your boss over that?
You can. Yeah, and if for some reason they didn't list how many hours you have available for vacation time that's built up, yeah, you could get sued for that as well, right? Small things like, hey, you know, as a franchisee in the pizza industry, I required my employees as soon as they got in to put an apron on, put their gloves on, and, you know, clean up, be prepared to enter your shift. Well, guess what? If you're not paying them for that half a minute that it took for them to do that, you could get sued under the private attorney general. Like, you could hire your own private attorney to act as the attorney general and to sue you, right? And that happens quite a bit, and it still continues to happen.
I think I know the answer, but then if you fire them, because obviously they probably have more problems than this, they come after you for that too, right?
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of a never-ending cycle. So I would just encourage your viewers to visit us at CaliforniaCALA.org, CaliforniaCALA.org, and learn more about our organization. You can reach out to us there. So if you are encountering, you know, we're not attorneys, we can certainly refer you over to somebody that could help. But if you happen to just have general questions on what you could do as an individual, you know, we do have a program where you can, we'll create what you need to reach out to your local mayor, your city council members, your state representatives, your state assembly member or senator. Let them know how these laws are impacting you and hopefully encourage them to reform some of these laws. You know, tort reform is not an easy issue. A lot of people don't necessarily understand it until they're hit with a lawsuit, right? But we want to help. We want to be helpful. So I would definitely encourage your viewers, again, to visit CaliforniaCALA.org and learn more about our work, what we do, and again, we're happy to be a resource as well.
Yeah, because so on our list of potential questions that we wanted to make sure and cover, so did we already hit the pending legislation that might help or hurt?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to put a bow on that if I could and just say the SB 84, which is sponsored by Senator Roger Niello just outside of Sacramento. He did try to push something similar a few years ago, SB 585, but because he is Republican, the first thing they do is say, hey, well, if it's a Republican, we want to make sure he fails at everything, right? And unfortunately, there isn't a lot of bipartisanship in Sacramento. But what happened different this time is we were able to get Senator Ashby and Senator Ana Caballero, who are very moderate Democrats in Sacramento, very pro-business Democrats, to come on board and help Senator Niello move this bill forward. So the bill will actually be heard this week. SB 84 will be heard in Senate Appropriations Committee. It would then go to a Senate floor vote. We were able to pass it 2 years ago out of the Senate. Failed in the assembly, unfortunately, because the chair of the committee was a trial attorney that became a legislator and really protected his friend's interests, right?
Yeah.
But different story. We have a new chair. We're hoping that that could be a little bit different in an Assembly Judiciary Committee. So that bill is critical. Again, we're going to see some movement on it this week. Hopefully you'll hear some good news about it as well if we are able to advance it out of appropriations. But, yeah, I just wanted to share that update, and then hopefully we'll get some relief. We can put it in front of the governor's desk in September and hopefully get his signature on that.
Nice. So if you could sit down, you know, like the next item here, what steps should legislators take to address the issue of lawsuit abuse? I would imagine that is a target-rich environment. But, like, let's just say you got to, sit down with them and hand them a short list, you know, because you can't reform the whole system in one bite. But, like, here are the top priorities. Like, here are the things you should tackle. What would that be? Or what would those
be? A number of issues. Definitely we covered ADA and this new bill, you know, SB 84. But I would certainly encourage them to consider, additional changes to the Private Attorney General Act. So that continues to be, a big issue. And these labor unions continue to add all these new labor laws, like the Private Attorney General Act, to create these opportunities to sue your boss, right? So that continues to be an issue. Really around Prop 65, we really do believe that there's an opportunity there to limit the amount of chemicals that are included in that list of, cancer or carcinogen type, chemicals. So we do believe that there's a way to streamline that, specifically on manufacturing, very similar to what we're asking for here on ADA and this, reform bill on ADA, on ADA law and this curing period that we call. We could see that definitely happening under Prop 65, right? So if you are a small manufacturer that's, making, sales of, 1 to 3 million a year, which is, not huge for, you know, for a manufacturer. Really, if they do make a mistake like that around Prop 65, there's no reason why they shouldn't also be given a time to cure it, right, to fix the issue. Okay, you have 1,000 toys that are out there. Well, instead of recalling that and losing a ton of money, why don't you allow them to fix the issue, whether it's, you know, you have 48 hours or, you know, you have 15 days to add that label to the new products that are being manufactured. That would be very helpful. And one issue that we probably won't get too much into today, and that is, that's really gambling, with these lawsuits. So one thing that we're seeing right now that's kind of new to California is called third party, litigation funding. So there are, you know, these law firms that actually raise money. They don't have the ability to sue a company. So what they'll do is they'll raise their own money and tell their investors, hey guys, we have this really good idea on this class action lawsuit. We're going to get $500 million for this. If you invest $10 million into this lawsuit, we'll give you $20 million back in 2 years. Right? So we'll just put a little bit of money into our law firm. We will then file this $500 million lawsuit. We'll double your money. Right? Well, we don't think that's fair. So what we're asking for in third party litigation is disclose it. Right? Who is gambling? Who is willing to gamble with your law firm? Right? Let us know who that is. Right now they're not disclosing that. All of a sudden they have all this money to file all these lawsuits, but they're not sharing who is funding these lawsuits. That's all we're asking for. We're not even asking for them to stop it, though we think it should.
Yeah.
But at least disclose who your funders are.
We have to take another quick break, but when we return, I'd like to have a couple of examples, because immediately I think of environmental type things that would qualify for, but I haven't heard of that idea, and I'd like to know who's doing that. Not mm-hmm. necessarily who, like, you know, what form, but, like, what types of issues would fall into that category. So our guest is Victor Gomez. He is with the California Citizens Against a Lawsuit Abuse. And you can find all their information on our site. It is CaliforniaCALA.org, just in case you, I don't know, have a computer, but you don't want to look at our website. Why would you do that? Because the commercial-free archive will be up later today. What the
That's
heck?
Right.
You can listen to the whole thing again. You can have a good time later, too. We'll be right back.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law? Well, you see, I didn't really mean you any harm, but I simply couldn't make it on the farm. When the land won't give a lot, you gotta do with what you got. And all I got's the muscle in my arm.
Ted Leidy with Northern Fire and Destruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822. Or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday Mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Golden Leaf Nursery is celebrating 50 years in business. Yep, 50 years. Seems like yesterday our nursery and landscape business was just a little seedling itself. But the truth is, we've been serving Shasta County for 50 years, growing shrubs, trees, and veggie plants since 1975. It's the 50th anniversary sale now, all through springtime. With all shrubs and trees and ground covers 1 gallon or larger, 30% off. We have a good selection of spring shade bloomers, such as azaleas and camellias, and many other sun-blooming plants to enhance your landscape in those sunny locations in the yard. This is a perfect time of the year to start preparing your vegetable garden. We have organic soils and fertilizers, including a full line of John and Bob's Organics, and we carry non-GMO seeds. So rest assured, you can have a healthy planting crop in your vegetable garden. All shrubs and trees and ground covers 1 gallon or larger are 30% off. If you have not been to Gold Leaf Nursery, we invite you to check us out and see for yourself why we have so many customers tell us what a unique nursery we have. Gold Leaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course and 1/4 mile from Airport Road.
I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Great combination. Lawyers, guns, and money. What could go wrong? I had a great time perusing songs about the law. Very enjoyable. All right, so Victor, who's getting, what are they amassing investors and then coming after us for so they can all divvy up the spoils?
Well, you know, recently, I'll use probably the most recent example of rolling the dice, right, with these lawsuits and throwing some money behind them. You know, recently, as you folks are aware, the Los Angeles area dealt with a number of fires. Even in Santa Cruz County, you know, a number of years ago, the CPU fire there burned down nearly 1,000 homes up in the mountains. Obviously, we know what happened in Paradise and many other communities statewide. But what was interesting recently with these LA fires, and maybe because it was more in a bigger city that it drew more, you know, more attention or certainly more political attention, was the rebuilding, right? So after you get, you know, fire destroys the Palisades and Altadena and these areas, well, there's a lot of work that has to be done to reconstruct. And one of the biggest challenges, whether you're building a new subdivision or just a single family home on a couple of acres, is the review process. But when you're going through a major subdivision and rebuilding of an entire city, it's the environmental issues that really slow down the process of just rebuilding your property. Whether you got to do soil testing or whatever it may be, it definitely drags the process, it drags on, right? The process just drags on. And so we hear, you know, the governor come out and say, hey, folks, I care about you so much that I'm going to waive CEQA reform, right? The California Environmental Quality Act. We're going to waive because we understand that's red tape and that's going to take you a year to go through. We're going to save you a year by waiving that requirement. Well, if he really did care about housing, building housing, or rebuilding homes that were burned down, you wouldn't even have CEQA. Or you would at least have some kind of environmental reform on CEQA. But this is a perfect opportunity, and we've already seen it, from these investors that are looking to, you know, put a little bit of money into a law firm. They're doing that, and now these environmental law firms are filing, you know, they're filing these lawsuits left and right, trying to slow down the process of people rebuilding and challenging it through CEQA law. Through the California Environmental Quality Act. And so, you know, that's big money. There is a lot of money. Even before this, there was a lot of money in either slowing somebody down. And again, they're not looking to necessarily take you to court. As you folks said earlier, they're looking for you just to settle.
Sure.
We just want to be a pest so we can get a payout. So environmental litigation is huge. Food litigation, cereal plaintiffs continue to exploit the legal loopholes in food labeling, right, and safety claims. We talked about Prop 65 and 80 and ADA law, but PAGA and Prop 65, those have been funded by, again, these investors for a number of years, and it's only getting worse, unfortunately.
So what's the prognosis on this, honestly? Like, does this just go on, you know, indefinitely? Because the state legislature, let's face it, you know, we can can all count the things they fixed on one hand. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What we're going to have to see from the state legislature specifically on gambling on lawsuits is going to have to be disclosure. So these investors are willing to put money in as long as you're willing to keep their name out of it. Right. We'll give you $10 million. We'll give you $50 million. A lot of this money is actually coming from hedge funds, right? And they don't want folks to know that they're betting, on these lawsuits, right? So going transparent and having, a legislation that forces these law firms to disclose who their donors are or who they're, in this case, who's willing to gamble for them to give them some money to gamble. All we're saying is, hey, disclose, be transparent, right?
Sure.
Disclose who's giving you money, because we believe if you get to that point of disclosure, a lot of these folks are going to say, wait, I don't want people to know that I'm suing them, right? I don't want to be listed as a hedge fund or as an individual or even as a company betting on your demise. Right. And so Senator Ana Caballero actually had introduced legislation in the past. But man, I'm telling you, the trial bar just spends so much money that it's just it's not really going anywhere. We're not going to give up, of course, but we're going to continue to push against these this gambling again on these lawsuits.
Yeah. There's really no way to know then. They're not required to disclose. There's no way you can. Yeah, I don't know, freedom of information, or there's no way to know who backs them?
No way to know, because they are private firms, right? So, yeah, but again, we think going public really does sort of put the magnifying glass on some of these donors who, again, are, you know, look, we live in a capitalistic environment. I'm a small business owner. I believe in our system. But when you get to that point where you're really sinking businesses.
Yeah.
So you can make some money. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a huge problem, because that's not. I mean, most people. You know, we've made reforms in the lawsuit industry, you know, along the way, because now if you sue your neighbor over nothing, bottom line is you wind up having to pay most of the time. You've got to pick up the legal fees and stuff, which is. The issue with a lot of the environmental lawsuits, they get paid whether they win or lose. So it's kind of incentivized more suits and bad ones. You don't even have to have a legitimate reason. This is kind of along that same vein. You know, if you can get people to bankroll you and then come at them with the behemoth, you know, the behemoth, then you can crush them.
Mm-hmm.
Does this...
And many folks would say, well, why should I care, right? I don't own the business that's getting sued, and I could care less what trial attorneys are doing. But, you know, what's kind of interesting is we all, Californians, all of us, every single Californian pays for this. So if you're tying up the court system, on average in California, every Californian, the 38-plus million, I know a couple of million have already escaped, the California environment, but who is left here in California is still paying over $2,300 a year in what we call a tort tax. So that is essentially tying up the court system with these lawsuits, that again, they're being funded by these third party, litigants or financiers. And each of us, we end up paying for it. It's not them. They don't need to pay for their time in court. We do, right? As California taxpayers, right? And so each of us individually pay $2,300 plus a year in California so that they can run these lawsuits through the judicial system here in California. So it impacts you whether you think it does or not. At the end of the day, it really does have an impact. It costs California nearly a million jobs a year, almost.
Wow.
A million jobs are lost every year because of excessive tort costs.
Well, people should care about that. I mean, that might ring a couple bells. The very last thing we had on this list that we kind of promised would be up for discussion today is how can small business owners or concerned citizens, but I would say a lot of small business owners, and many of them may have been retired or something like that, but they might want to get involved in this. How do they do that?
Yeah, well, number one, try not to, it's so, you know, again, spending 17 years in the franchise industry, it's easy. I was an owner operator. You know, I had an apron on. You caught me making your pizza. I was not a guy that would just sit in the back and do nothing. In California, it's so expensive to run a business. You have to be hands-on in California to turn a profit. And so because we are so busy, we are doing so many things, it's easy to just get caught up on the day-to-day operations. But one thing that's very, very important is for you to share your story, right? Share your story with, again, your local. If you're getting hit with an ADA lawsuit, if you're being hit with a PAGA lawsuit, Prop 65, you're a manufacturer, you may have to fire people or let people go because sure. You got to pay for that lawsuit. You should share that story with your mayor, with your county supervisor, and eventually with the state legislature, because they should care. And I think in many cases, when they know you are in their district and they hear your story, it does make a difference because you know that person. You may have grown up with that, with the mayor, with the city council member, with the county supervisor, with the state legislator. They may know you personally if you have those relationships, or even if you don't, send a letter to the editor. Send an opinion piece. We're happy to even help with that, right, to help frame those narratives appropriately so you share that story. Because, again, when I go up to Sacramento and I bring that small business owner that's been hit with an ADA lawsuit or PAGA or whatever it may be, when they hear it, when I meet with that senator and that assembly member and I say, hey, assembly member, blah, 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 this, you know, operator has a taco shop in your district, let them, you know, hear them out and what they just went through. Man, I'll tell you, that story goes a long way, and it's a very, very effective way to really, you know, again, communicate with these decision makers so they know what the right thing to do really is.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And a lot of times people don't want to because they're afraid it'll almost red flag them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, I had somebody come and file an ADA lawsuit at my place, and the last thing you want to do is highlight that.
Yeah, draw more attention. Yeah, no doubt about it. And we're here to help navigate that. So, again, if they, you know, your listeners, you know, they could reach out to CaliforniaKayla.org. They could, contact us through the website, and we're happy to sort of help you navigate through that. And, again, even if you want to be kept a bit discreet, we have ways of doing that and still being able to share your story as well.
Okay. Well, that's good. I don't think, just out of curiosity, of the other states, is this is in all 50 states or a bunch of, Kayla, is this an organization all over the place?
No, you know, and there are a couple others that have started. We have some in, you know, Florida and Texas, Illinois, you know, New York. There are a couple of states where, you know, small business owners like myself finally came together and said, hey, we gotta do something here. And so that has happened. It's very organic, right? So it's not like there's a ton of money going to these states to help fund these programs and this work. But yeah, there are a number of states that that are dealing with it. But still, again, California just continues to hover. You know, the American Tort Reform Association does this annual report called the Judicial Hellholes Report, and it's the worst states, right? The top, you know, usually 7-8 states in the nation that face these lawsuits left and right. Well, no surprise. California just continues to rank up at the top. If we're not number one, we're in the top three, right?
And we're
so,
number one.
Unfortunately, unfortunately, I don't see this work ending anytime soon.
Boo. You know?
But we're going to keep fighting. I guess.
That's what I figured. I didn't want to assume. Well, Victor Gomez, we have to run away because the news is going to be on to tell us what other things happened while we were busy chatting with you. It has been lovely. So let's see. You can find them at CaliforniaCALA.org, and we appreciate you coming on with us, and please keep us posted. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you both. Thank you so much.
We'll be back next hour with Phil Kirpin. This is We the People. We the People Radio.
.us.
3 CT Reading.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Former acting director of FEMA, Cameron Hamilton, ousted from his job by Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem one day after he told lawmakers he didn't support eliminating the agency. David Richardson, a senior official at DHS, will be taking over, and he spoke to the Salem Radio Network about how and why he was chosen.
That came mostly through the Deputy Chiefs of Staff over at the Department of Homeland Security, and they let me know that that was the Secretary's wish, and I promptly packed my gear and moved over to FEMA, so that's how I got the word.
Public policy expert Matthew Continetti says President Trump should be very pleased with his just-completed trip to the Middle East. He adds Mr. Trump has successfully communicated the vision of his second-term foreign policy.
He kind of said this is a new era in the world. I'm a new president. I'm now interested in trade. I'm not interested in lecturing other governments. So it's going to be interest-based, economics-based, and the way to ensure peace with the United States is to engage in commercial relationships with the United States.
Continetti making his comments to the Salem Radio Network. Meanwhile, during the trip, President Trump secured new investment pledges for the United States and also announced major orders for Boeing. Also at townhall.com, a new AP poll tracking political loyalties now suggests both parties in the United States seem to be moving, of course, as always, in opposite directions. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky meeting with top U.S. and European officials in Rome. It's all part of an intensified diplomacy pact ahead of a key phone call that comes up tomorrow between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. More on these stories, townhall.com.
Living with everyday pain is like having a voice that always says, no, no, you can't do that. You can't go there. You can't play your favorite sport. You better sit this one out. It's no way to live. If pain is affecting you, see how Relief Factor can help you get back to living life again on your terms. One where you say yes a whole lot more. Head over to ReliefFactor.com or give them a call at 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by a team of doctors and scientists, Relief Factor's unique formula of natural ingredients doesn't just mask pain, it helps reduce or eliminate it for good. Whether it's your back, neck, your joints, your muscles, Relief Factor can help you, as it has for so many others. Give Relief Factor's three-week quick start a try. It's only $19.95, a low-cost way for you to sort of take it out for a test drive. Less than a dollar a day. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF. See how you could live with less pain, and you can say yes to more of everything you want with Relief Factor.
A new category of college athletes jumping up and down for joy.
The sports of acrobatics and tumbling, as well as stunt, are now on track to achieve NCAA championship status for women by spring 2027. Acrobatics and tumbling became an emerging sport in 2020, and stunt received that designation in 2023. Each sport is sponsored by more than 40 schools across the three divisions, the minimum threshold for achieving championship status. Bob Agner reporting.
Business leaders taking a close look at the latest king-size merger, Charter Communications and Cox Communications joining forces in a deal worth $34.5 billion, bringing together two of the biggest cable companies in the country. Charter will acquire Cox Communications commercial fiber and manage IT and cloud businesses. Cox will contribute to their communications residential cable business to Charter Holdings. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. The John Scott Report, 16 men have died by court-ordered execution so far this year in America.
11 other people are scheduled to be put to death in 8 states during the remainder of 2025. Glenn Rogers died by lethal injection in Florida on Thursday. Executions are scheduled in Texas and Indiana on May 20th and Tennessee on May 22nd. Other states with scheduled executions this year are Alabama, Mississippi, Ohio, and Oklahoma. So far this year, executions have been carried out in Alabama, Arizona, Florida, Louisiana, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas. John Scott reporting.
FDA approving Novavax COVID-19 vaccine. There are some restrictions. Novavax making the nation's only traditional protein-based coronavirus vaccine. And while it has been authorized for use, it had expected full approval as early as last month. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of Be the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
You can always find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. There you go.
There you have it.
.net, .biz, dot a lot of things, just not .com. Somebody has it, and they want me to pay them a lot of money for it, and I'm just not doing it.
Yeah, we don't need it.
Nah, I'm just not doing it.
They're small potatoes.
So we go with .us, what the heck.
Yeah.
But I tell you, got archives going back like 15 years. I can't tell you how many times I'm talking to somebody who says, well, have you ever heard of... And I'm like, well, as a matter of fact, I interviewed them.
We talked about that when I had hair.
I didn't even know you when you had hair.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay, I lied.
Ouch. I'm calling your mom. So we've done all sorts of stuff. And just in case you're thinking we're doing, you know, dopey local... Okay, not to say that local is dopey, but if you're thinking it's just, you know, a bunch of stuff nobody cares about, well, just to let you know how in the know we are, we did a show with Robert Tannenbaum. We did a couple, actually, but at the end of April, April 27th, he was part of the review for the Warren Commission and some of that stuff on the Kennedy assassination. And imagine my surprise, we interviewed him on a Sunday, and Friday he was on Coast to Coast Radio. There you go. Hmm. So, Phil Kirpin, our guest this hour, you just for your invite.
Yeah, George Norrie's going to be calling you, I'm sure.
We're apparently the conduit to the big time.
You know anything about flying saucers?
Yeah, okay, ancient astronaut theorist. You piped down over there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right, so Phil Kirpin, he's been on with us before, and it's going to be really fun. So this will be the end of Bill and I, and then Phil will just, like, talk to us for a whole hour. He is a leading free market policy analyst and advocate in Washington, D.C. He was the principal policy and legislative strategist at Americans for Prosperity for over 5 years. He previously worked at the Free Enterprise Fund, Club for Growth, and the Cato Institute. He's also a nationally syndicated columnist, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, and the author of the 2011 book, Democracy Denied. He's the president of American Commitment, that is dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom. They engage in critical public policy fights over the size and intrusiveness of government. Imagine that.
Plenty of that to go around.
Yeah, lots of that. Through direct advocacy, strategic policy and analysis, and grassroots mobilization, he works with key partners. And American Commitment delivers timely, effective public policy research to the broader free market movement dedicated to restoring and protecting free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom. Yeah. And I tried to say it as fast as Phil would say it.
Yeah.
Because he talks actually faster than I do. But I have linked up previous shows with him. We've talked about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and all sorts of interesting things. So today is about the big, beautiful bill that you keep hearing about. And David was in there waving something to me while I was trying to read something and talk really fast. So he's telling me, give us a second because they're having trouble connecting. Okay. So.
Yeah, I had a feeling he wasn't there because otherwise you would have heard raucous laughter after that.
He missed all my fun. You'll have to listen to the archive.
Yeah.
And by the way, our archives, just to skip that over, a lot of archives on radio programs and things, it costs money to listen. It's, you know, you have to be a subscriber. You have to give your email. You have to do all this stuff. Ours? Go to WeThePeopleRadio.us. You click on the button to listen. It's an MP3 file. You can put it on your phone. You can listen to it on your computer. You can burn it to a CD and sell it to your friends. I don't care.
Well, it's all broken out by categories, too. So if you have something in particular you want information on, it's real easy to find.
It is easy to find, and we've had a lot of really interesting people. So we hope you make use of that, because we try to do things that are not, you know, not specific to one small area and are not things that are going away anytime soon. Yeah, so let's see. Oh, I have attached his article, Phil Kirpin's article from April 30th. Oh, I hear sounds of life on the other side. Phil, we've been goofing off. And I tried to read your bio. I tried to read your bio as fast as you would read your bio, so you missed that part. But I just want you to know, I did my very best.
Very good, very good. How are we doing today?
Oh, you know what? Well, obviously, you know, we're reading your bio at high speed, so...
What could be more fun than that? Wow.
Well, exactly, because, you know, you too could say, you know, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom.
Whoa, that is faster than I read.
Isn't that great?
Very nice.
I've been practicing while you were trapped in...
Don't mishear me.
In we can't connect to you on the phone land. Oh, my God.
Wow.
So all we keep hearing about is the big, beautiful bill. But I do believe that there are pieces of this, like the RAINS Act, that is absolutely not being discussed. And so I was really excited when I saw your article about that, because I thought, good, I want people to know about that because I think they would like it.
Yeah, this is kind of an amazing one. You know, we'll see if it survives. I don't want everyone too excited because I don't know if what's in the bill will stay in the bill. But, you know, while all of the focus has been on the Ways and Means Committee and the Energy and Commerce Committee, they respectively have all the tax changes and all the Medicaid changes.
Well,
so
don't forget all the big lies about how we're getting rid of Social Security and Medicare, right? So a lot of focus on things that are fictional.
Which, by the way, you know, Social Security by law cannot be changed in the reconciliation bill.
Right.
So I don't even know what these people are talking about. You know, they
don't either.
It's insane. they just don't care whether what they say is true or not. But the House Judiciary Committee, with very little fanfare, actually put one of the most important provisions ever, if it were able to pass, in their title, their section of the Big Beautiful Bill. And it's a bill we've talked about in your show before called the RAINS Act. And this would sort of reverse the process for the way that Congress reviews regulations. The way it works now, agencies more or less do whatever they want unless somehow, once in every great while, you get a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate to overturn a regulation. And even then, unless there's been a recent presidential election, you just get a veto by the same president whose bureaucrats promulgated the regulation in the first place, and that's the end of that. So the way it works now, Congress only ever overturns a regulation when they affirmatively muster a majority in House and Senate to overturn it after the fact, and when there's just been a presidential election, so the new guy can sign the overturn. Other than that, agencies pretty much get free rein, at least from Congress. Sometimes the courts step in and stop them, but that's, of course, always a roll of the dice. Under this bill, which, as I said, has been included in the Judiciary Committee titled The Big Beautiful Bill, under this bill, the major regulations, the significant ones, the ones that have a major economic impact and major impact on the federal budget, the agencies would no longer be able to implement them directly. Instead, they would have to send them as a proposal to Congress, and they would have to get affirmative approval by a majority in both the House and the Senate first before they could take effect. And I believe if we had this process in place, even when we have Democrats in the House, Senate, and White House, we would be able to stop the worst of the worst. For instance, remember when Obama was president and they tried to do the big cap-and-trade climate bill, which, of course, you have a state version of in California, but they tried to do nationally. They couldn't, even with pretty sizable Democratic majorities in both the House and Senate. They fell short. I think they passed it by 8 votes in the House, and then they never even had the vote in the Senate because all the Democratic senators were running for the hills. But then the EPA pretty much implemented half the things that were in that bill on their own. They just did them by regulation. Well, if we had this process in place, all of those EPA rules would have had to be sent up for approval, and we probably would have been able to stop almost all of them. And, of course, you know, if you can't stop a regulation under this process, you would at least be able to look up who voted for it and hold them accountable come election time without it all just riding on the presidential and having these wild
pendulum swings back and forth every 4 or 8 years with the party in the White House. So this is a huge idea. If we got this in, it would probably be worth about $1 trillion in deficit reduction, because we'd have a faster growing economy and we'd have, you know, less demand on government programs if we had a more stable, more business friendly regulatory environment. That was a Heritage Foundation estimate. And it is in the House bill. Now, I have heard conflicting opinions as to whether Senate rules will allow this to stay in the Senate. Senator Mike Lee says absolutely it can stay in. I have heard from several other experts that this would be fatal to the bill and needs to be removed immediately in the Senate. So I don't know.
Senate rules don't make any sense to me.
I don't know who's right about that. But for the moment at least, this very important reform is in the House version.
Okay. Well, is it the Byrd rule? I mean, is that what's doing it?
Yeah, this would be a Byrd rule challenge, I believe. But, you know, the way they wrote it, to try to survive this, they, instead of just saying regulations that are economically significant would go through this process of requiring approval, what they said is rules that have a substantial impact on the federal budget would have to go up for approval. And, you know, that actually in practice ends up being just about the same thing, because the rules that make a big impact on the economy also necessarily make a big impact on the budget. But by phrasing it this way, they think that it may survive the Senate rules, although, as I said, there is a difference of opinion on that point, so it remains to be seen.
Well, so why give people some examples of why they care about this?
Well, you know, the single most costly regulation in the history of the country is the Biden administration's ban on internal combustion vehicles. And, of course, your listeners might not care too much about that because California already has its own ban, whether we have a national ban or not. But even the California ban, that needed to get federal approval. And so if we had this process in place, a lot of these really destructive, expensive regulations, like the one that says you can't buy an internal combustion vehicle, if that's the kind of car or truck you prefer, I'm not saying that could never happen, but in order for it to happen, they'd have to get a majority in the House and Senate. And I think that would be very, very hard for something like that, even when they have Democrats in. And so it makes a big impact on some of these things that affect your life directly, including, you know, a lot of the water regulations and energy regulations, things that Trump has talked about a lot. There's a real question whether those things ever could have gotten through if there had to be a vote in the House and Senate and actual majorities in favor of it. And, of course, you know, that's just kind of the energy and environment area. There are all kinds of things that make financial services more expensive and inaccessible, that make, you know, labor policy, that make it more difficult to do business, all kinds of different rules and regulations from the vast federal leviathan. And the hope would be, if the agencies need to send it up to Congress and get a majority, they're going to do a much better job writing a rule, because they know that they're going to need to command majority support, so it's really going to need to be much better developed and better defended and much more solid on the merits. And so I think we would see the cost of federal regulation go down a lot. And just so that people understand kind of the scale of what we're talking about, new regulations in the 4 years of the Biden administration imposed a cost in net present value terms of about $47,000 per household. So net present value, that means that in order for you to pay off the costs of what Biden's new regulations would cost you over the rest of your life, you would have to stick $47,000 in a special savings account just to cover regulatory compliance costs. And that's just the new costs that we had in the 4 years of Joe Biden. Now, Trump's going to reverse a lot of that, and he has since reversed that electric vehicle mandate. But you know, there are a lot of costs associated with these things just being turned on and off. And also, it's a terrible thing for the economy to have kind of everything ride from a regulatory standpoint on the presidential election. We would have a lot more stability if these things went through Congress.
Yeah. And you're right. So when you say, like, you know, we make these wild swings, maybe because I think people feel it, but they don't really know why that's happening. Maybe you could kind of spell that out a little bit, why this is a bad thing and what it looks like on the ground that we did, and we just didn't have it in the past. I mean, it's kind of a new phenomenon.
The waiver that lets California set its own fuel economy standards and therefore ban internal combustion vehicles, that was issued for the first time under the Obama administration, right? And Trump came in and he got rid of it. And Biden came in and he put it back on, and now Trump's going to get rid of it again. So, you know, if you're an auto dealer, an automaker, you know, how do you make sense of what your next 5 or 10 years look like from a planning standpoint, from an investment standpoint. If every time the party in the White House changes, the whole business changes. And, you know, that's just the most obvious example, but there's so many other examples across all the different policy areas, healthcare, energy, tech policy, everything. We just have such wildly different regulatory approaches right now between the two political parties. The Democrats are so aggressive and heavy-handed, and they pose so much cost and so much constraint on all of these business areas. And, you know, Republican, you get a Republican, and it could take a whole 4-year term just to reverse the things the Democrats did, let alone try to do new things and do other deregulations and so forth. And so it's really, really tough on businesses from a planning standpoint, and there's a serious negative impact on economic growth and on wage growth as a consequence of that ping-ponging back and forth. And, of course, you know, if you think like I do that most of these regulations are terrible and they should be gotten rid of, then Republicans aren't doing the wrong thing, spending most of their time just on doing what the last Democratic administration did. But, you know, think how much more productive they could be if the Democrats weren't off to the races every time on all these regulations, but instead, you know, had a process where they need to actually sell them to Congress and get them approved and, do many fewer, but they would have to be much better or else they wouldn't be able to get through. So it really would be a total change in process that I think would be really, really positive, not just from the perspective of, you know, people like me who like, you know, a smaller government and less regulation, but, you know, just if you like regulation, just the quality of them is going to be much, much better, I think, if they have to be able to command majority support in the Congress.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's a lot less because the regulation, when it is coming at people like that, they don't even know. I mean, there's supposed to be a little bit of fanfare, but there isn't. Suddenly, all of a sudden, you find yourself kind of captured. It's like, how did this happen? When did we pass all these laws? And I think that's where the confusion lies. You know, we write these kind of...
Yeah, people kind of see the federal regulations in their own industry, right? Especially if you're in a heavily regulated industry, you kind of get that there are a lot of rules and regulations. But all the rules and regulations on businesses that you're not involved in yourself, where you see them in the prices you pay. That's where you see them.
Yes.
You don't really see them any other place. And even then, you know, unless you're thinking about it, you don't know. I mean, look, the price, for instance, of HVAC systems for your home approximately doubled under the Biden administration in those 4 years. The average for a new central air unit and handler went from about $6,000 to about $12,000. Okay? Now, unless you need to replace an HVAC unit in your house, you don't even know. You have no idea. But you know what? The next time you have to, your eyes are going to bulge out. Right?
Well, or you go to buy a new home. I mean, like we need our homes to cost more money.
That's a really good point. I mean, especially because of so many of the regulations in the last administration were geared towards home appliances and home systems, that it really does have a material impact on home affordability when all of the appliances are more expensive and all of the systems are more expensive. Now, Trump is reversing all of those. He's in the process of reversing all of those. But, you know, think about this from the manufacturer's standpoint, right? If you just spent a fortune to comply with new regulations and then the regulations are removed, well, you're not going to unspend all the money that you spent, right? And so you're probably going to keep producing the things you were producing. Now, there might be competitive pressures of somebody who brings, you know, lower cost models back on or that kind of thing. But on the whole, you get more of a ratchet in the direction of things costing more, even when these regulations toggle on and off.
Yeah, it just becomes ridiculous. And most of them don't make your life better. I guess that's the whole thing, and people figure that out right away. Phil, we have to take a really quick break.
Well, if they make it better, then you don't need to require it.
Well,
make that choice.
Because people would like it, right? And then they would do it for themselves, but they're not, so that should be obvious. But then, you know, we have the babysitters. We have the babysitter faction that says, you know, that we're not qualified to make those decisions for ourselves.
You know, it's good for yourself, yeah.
Yeah, we shouldn't be looking out after ourselves. Us children, you know, we need to have supervision at all times. So part of the supervision is we have to take breaks. And so we will be, David the Fun Killer in there has his finger on the button. So we will be right back. Our guest is Phil Kirpin. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Your hand, your black cards can make you. I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
Need help with your health insurance? We've got you covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Well, there you go, Phil. If you ever turn American Commitment into a musical, there's your theme song.
Yeah, good one.
Mm-hmm. Because honestly, at this point, that's kind of the Trump plan, right? We want it all, and we want it now. Because
well, they're loading it all up into this one bill, so it's a must. It's a must do. It's a must. You know, and we can get into, if you'd like, the tax title and the energy and commerce title that has potentially some Medicaid changes. I'm happy to talk about any of the other aspects or stand regulation, whatever you want.
Yeah, sure. Because there will be changes, but it won't be to people who it won't affect the people who legitimately are in those programs who qualify for them.
Well,
unless it's maybe a work requirement or something.
Well, I'm hoping we are going to have a work requirement. Just so people understand, federal Medicaid spending is up more than 50% in the last 5 years, and it's almost doubled in the state of California, federal Medicaid funding into California, over the Biden years. The budget that Newsom just sent up, the budget revision that Newsom just sent up, expects more than $120 billion of federal Medicaid funding in the next fiscal year. That is more than the entire state budget of the state of Florida, just in federal Medicaid dollars to the state of California. And that's because you put illegal immigrants into Medicaid, you get rid of income and asset rules for nursing homes, so everyone in the state of California can go into nursing homes on federal dollars. You basically opened up the floodgates and you have to give credit, I guess, to the geniuses in California who figured out how to milk federal taxpayers to the maximum. But essentially, the state doesn't even put up the state share anymore. Instead, the way they contribute the quote-unquote state share is they tax the Medicaid managed care organizations just to release the federal money, and then they give the money back to them. And in fact, they get reimbursed for that and then some, and so they come out ahead, and then the quote-unquote state dollars that were raised can be used for the illegals. And this is what's been going on. And so we're hoping that there are going to be some substantial reforms to tighten all of this up. They were talking about fixing these loopholes, this provider tax loophole, or this now more sophisticated managed care organization tax like California and New York have. That is not in this bill. In fact, what they did is they prohibited states from doing it going forward, so they basically grandfather California and New York, which I find pretty outrageous, but I guess the politics of the members from those states or something like that is why they compromised on that. And we still have this bizarre situation where, you know, for every dollar of state Medicaid spending on a disabled person or a pregnant woman or an elderly person or children, you get $1.33 in federal money. But for every dollar that you spend of state funds on an able-bodied, non-disabled, working-age adult, you get $9 of federal funds because of the way Obamacare was written with the massive... Sorry, what?
That just doesn't make sense.
No one can defend it. No one can make it make sense to me. And what I've said is, look, even if you don't want to save money for federal taxpayers by lowering the match rate for the Obamacare expansion population, those able-bodied working-age adults, even if you're totally against just lowering that as savings for the federal taxpayer, at least meet in the middle. You could do it even on a deficit-neutral basis, but at least meet in the middle so we're not creating this huge reward for states if they cover an able-bodied, non-disabled, working-age adult versus an actual needy person who was the reason the program was committed in the first place. Exactly. So I find it totally indefensible, the disparity. But they have not addressed that in the version of the bill that came out of committee last week. The one thing they did do was work requirements, which say if you're not disabled, if you're able to work, in order to get free health care from Medicaid, you have to either be working or be in a qualified job training program. So they did put that in there, but it doesn't start until 2029. So it's pretty meager. They've done very, very little in terms of Medicaid reform in this bill. And this is one of the holdups right now, why you've got a handful of more conservative House members saying, wait a second, we're not going to vote for this until you strengthen it, led by Chip Roy from Texas. And so that's kind of the holdup at the moment. The other big holdup at the moment is most of the Green New Deal, Inflation Reduction Act giveaways for wind and solar and hydrogen and all of that, most of those either don't get eliminated at all or get phased out over several years, are kept intact for quite a while. And so, you know, that's another point of contention, because you could save a lot of money for taxpayers if you got rid of those immediately or if you brought back some of the Medicaid reforms that we were talking about, or at least if the only Medicaid reform we're going to get is the work requirements, you could start it a lot sooner than 2029. And so this is the big stumbling block right now, is that they seem to have accommodated some of the moderate members to such an extent that some of the conservatives now are kind of, throwing their hands up and saying, stop, we need to dial this bill back in the other direction.
Do you have the numbers on how much Medicaid funds were spent on illegals in California?
It's about $10 billion, as I understand it. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. And it's a little tricky, because they will say that all but, I think $1 or $2 billion of it is what's designated emergency, like true emergency, like someone's about to die and then you take them to the emergency room. And that does get federal funding. The rest of it is notionally state funding, but remember, they use that money laundering scale with the managed care organization tax to basically turn federal money into quote-unquote state money and then use that to cover the illegals. And so now you, of course, as both California and federal taxpayers, probably find it equally offensive either way which pot of money it's coming from. But as a federal taxpayer, I find it particularly egregious that they use a money laundering technique to essentially take federal funds to cover illegals, which is supposed to be prohibited by law.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And that is... That's always a huge thing. The one thing with this, though, the must-pass part of this is really the tax, the continuation of the 2017 tax bill, or everybody's taxes are going up.
This is the reason they have to get it done, whatever else is included or not included. If they fail to extend the expiring tax provisions, then, when the clock strikes midnight on December 31st, the Trump tax cuts turn into a pumpkin and everybody's taxes go up pretty significantly.
Yes, significantly.
The standard deduction gets cut in half. All of the rates go up. The child credit goes from $2,000 to $1,000. And so, obviously it depends how many kids you have and other things, but on average, you're looking at $2,000 to $3,000 per family in higher taxes if that happens. And so I don't think that they can let that happen, but the danger is that they can't get consensus among Republicans, and we start moving towards the end of the year, and Republican leadership says, oh, well, I guess we need to cut a deal with the Democrats instead. And I don't even want to know what that bill looks like, but it's not going to be good.
Well, the kicker is they can do another reconciliation. You know, they can do another reconciliation that could involve some other things. The problem is if we get the guys that won't vote for anything that isn't perfect, that's not really the world we live in, and the tax stuff has to get done. For all the people out there that think that all these tax breaks are going, you know, going to the rich, it's like you kind of need to pay attention.
This is the thing that's so crazy about the whole tax cuts for the rich. And first of all, every single person who pays taxes got a tax cut under the Trump tax cuts, with only one exception. And that exception was very high-income people in very high state and local income tax areas. And because of the cap on the state and local tax deduction, some of those people did see a tax increase. But even in a state like New York or a state like California, it's about 8% of households in those very high tax states had an increase. The vast majority of people, even in those states, got a tax cut. But bizarrely, this is one of the big holdups on the bill right now, is we've got some Republican members from these very high tax states who want to get rid of the SALT cap. The problem with that is, there's two problems. One is a scoring problem.
State and local tax.
For property tax and income tax.
Yeah.
There used to be no limit on how much you could deduct unless you were in the AMT. And so, you know, a lot of people who were not in the AMT, they could deduct a whole bunch now. Of course, a lot of people think that they were able to deduct a whole bunch because they don't kind of connect the dots, but they were actually paying AMT and it was taking all of their state and local tax deduction back from them already. And so you've got some people who are angry about this cap who weren't actually hurt by it, but just didn't necessarily connect the dots that under the AMT, which, you know, almost nobody pays anymore post the Trump tax cuts, but a lot of families in high tax states did pay before. Under that, you got no deduction. You got a zero deduction for state and local tax if you were in the AMT. And so it gets a little bit complicated, but the bottom line is the only people who got a tax increase were very wealthy people in very high tax blue states. And, you know, the Democrats have always told us they want to tax the rich more, except apparently not their rich. Apparently when they say tax the rich, they don't mean their rich in blue states because they hate the SALT cap.
Yeah. Well, and so I was, carrying around the Ways and Means kind of chart here because it was pretty good. It was actually very tight little deal here. So as a result of the Trump tax cuts, the bottom 20% of earners saw their federal tax rate fall to its lowest level in 40 years. And if you look at this thing, the bottom 50% of taxpayers pay 2.3% of the total income taxes. That's a lot of people not paying a whole lot. The top 10% pay 75.8%. Their rate went up. It went from 70 to 75. And the top 1%.
And by the way, that's with most of them getting a tax cut. But what often happens with a tax cut is you produce more, you have higher income,
right,
and with a lower percentage, you're paying more in tax in dollar terms. And by the way, we saw that very much on the corporate side, where the rate was cut from 35 to 21. Now, that one does not expire. That one was made permanent, but revenues went up dramatically from the corporate tax when we cut that rate. And one of the things I am worried about in this process is that at some point you might see an amendment that, say, you know, supersizes the child credit and raises the corporate rate or something like that. And I hope we'll be able to beat back an amendment that tries to do that, because the lower corporate rate has been a massive success, not just in making us much more competitive internationally, but also in raising revenue. We've raised more money. The federal government has raised a lot more money at a lower corporate rate than they did at a higher rate. And so when you look at these tax shares, by the way, the top 1% of income earners paid an all-time record percentage of total income taxes in 2022. They paid 45% of all the income taxes in 2022. Now, it was down a little in 2023, but it was still over 40%. And so this regime with lower rates, including a 37% rate at the top and 20% exclusion for small business income, we're raising more money than ever from people at the top using these reduced rates. And so, you know, this class warfare stuff from the Democrats it really doesn't make much sense in terms of the way these policies have actually succeeded.
Well, it doesn't pencil with actual IRS information, because then my last one here, in 2017, the top 1% were paying 38.5%. In 2021, they're paying 45.8%. So the top 1%.
Yeah, I think it went down a little bit in the most recent year, but
it's still above 38. Yeah. So this idea that these people,
it's still
above
40 in the most recent year.
That these guys got like a free ride is just, well, it's just not factual.
Correct. And the other thing I think is very important if we're talking about the danger of this whole thing expiring is when they cut the rate for corporate businesses from 35 to 21, one of the things that a lot of members, particularly Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, was concerned about is, look, what about all the non-corporate businesses? What about all the family businesses, all of the partnerships, all the proprietorships, all the businesses that do not use a corporate form? We've got to do better for them than just cutting the top rate from 39.6 to 37, especially because the tax for their corporate competitors is going down so much. And they came up with this idea called 199 capital A. And basically what that does is it excludes 20% of non-corporate business income on individual returns. And there's some guardrails, so like big law firms and consulting firms, they can't really take advantage of this. But the idea is that for manufacturing businesses, for a lot of businesses that use partnerships and other non-corporate forms, we wanted them to have a substantial tax cut and a lower tax rate so that they could be more competitive. And so not only was the rate cut from 39.6 to 37, but they also got to exclude 20% of their income. And so the rate on small business income went from about 40% to about 29%, 29 point something when you have that exclusion. And the Big Beautiful Bill actually not only extends it, but it increases the small business exclusion from 20% to 23%. And so the effective rate goes from 29 and change to about 28. And so there's a significant tax cut in this bill for small businesses, for non-corporate businesses, which will make them more competitive, make it easier for them to invest and expand their businesses, to give people raises and so forth. I think that's a really important aspect of this, both in terms of the positive of what they're trying to do, but also the negative and the danger of this falls apart. And the automatic tax hike happens January 1st for businesses that are non-corporate businesses and pay on an individual return. We're talking about a much bigger tax hike than we are for regular individual ratepayers, because we're talking about them going from 29% and change to 40%. And so we've got to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, we do. And so we have to take a quick break. So anybody who tells you from this point forward that they're cutting benefits to seniors, veterans, all that stuff with Social Security, that is a lie. It is not in the bill. The Big Beautiful Bill does not cut Social Security. It also doesn't cut Medicare to seniors, and it doesn't cut veterans' benefits. So, I don't know what else we can say other than those are not true, and we have a song about it. So we're going to play it right now. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Step into a world of adventure at the Shasta Renaissance and Fantasy Fair on May 24th and 25th. The Anderson Fairgrounds transforms into a realm of knights, jesters, and magic. Watch thrilling armored combat. Enjoy lively Celtic and folk music. Feast like royalty. And shop handcrafted treasures from artisans far and wide. Tickets are just $15 for adults, $13 for youth, $11 to $17, and kids 10 and under. Get in free. Get yours now at Eventbrite and skip the lines. Proudly sponsored by Shasta Stalls, your local consignment gift shop featuring you meat finds, handcrafted goods, and arts and craft classes at 2185 North Street in Anderson. And Reading Anime, your hub for anime, gaming, and pop culture in the North State. And Creature Comforts, the rock and roll barbershop at 2181 North Street in Anderson, where you can get a fresh cut and enjoy a free beer while you wait. Don't miss out on the magic. Join us May 24th and 25th at the Shasta Renaissance and Fantasy Fair. Huzzah!
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills. It's somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you played before. California's a brand new game.
Yes, and we make up our own rules here.
That's right. If you don't like them,
then we'll just make up some more.
You pay more.
Oh, no, you get that anyway. That's just a feature, not a bug.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, Phil. What have we missed? What have we not included in this sparky little discussion here?
Well, you know, I think we covered the tax piece, which is the biggest piece. The one aspect of it we didn't talk about that much are the Inflation Reduction Act green giveaways.
Mm, yes.
This is, you know, they originally said it was going to be $300 billion. Now the score is over $1 trillion.
Wow.
In giveaways for wind and solar subsidies and electric vehicles and all of the, you know, hydrogen, all of the other favored non-fossil fuel energy sources. And every single Republican in Congress voted against this bill, the Inflation Reduction Act. By the way, the worst, most backwardsly misnamed bill since the Affordable Care Act, the Inflation
yeah.
Reduction Act, which we all remember how much it reduced inflation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but they had this, you know, they had about $1 trillion in giveaways. And the Republicans, shockingly, are mostly failing to repeal them. They've got a bunch of them that they repeal starting in 2028 and 29, and they've got some with a multi-year phase down, and they've got some that they keep completely. And so this is another one of these classic examples of the Democrats come in, spend some ungodly amount of money on a variety of new programs, and Republicans say, oh, I don't know if we can get rid of it. Such and such business in my district gets that money, and so maybe let's start a phase out that'll never succeed. I mean, you think about some of these things. The wind production tax credit started in 1992, and it was going to be just 5 years. And every time it gets extended, they say, oh, this is the last time. We just say, well, we'll be able to stand on our own without this. We just have one more extension. But it never, these things never end. They never end. It's unbelievable. And so I think that, you know, that aspect of this bill could be much, much stronger. And, you know, if they could bring that in, they could also do, you know, one of the big things that's missing in this bill that they could easily pay for if they accelerated the green credits or accelerated the Medicaid work requirements or any other things we're talking about. They could do the president's 15% corporate rate, which he campaigned on over and over and over. That's nowhere to be found in this bill. I thought I was, you know, when I flipped through it, I was like, well, where's that 15% rate? You remember we talked about how successful going from 35 to 21 was and how
yeah.
we became kind of the most attractive destination in the world for multinational corporations, and they relocated tons of activity here, and revenues actually went up, not down. Well, the rest of the world hasn't been standing still. They responded to our cut by cutting, and we're again, believe it or not, when you add in state and local corporate tax on top of the federal, we're not at 21, we're at about 26. And that's actually above average in the OECD countries. And so to really be competitive, we should be cutting that again. And we could easily pay to cut that again if they would just fix some of these shortcomings in the bill. And so, and those are the big changes that I've been urging for. And, you know, we'll see. As I said, it's all sort of up in the air right now. They haven't even cleared the House yet, and then, of course, you know, the Senate might have totally different ideas. So the one thing I can say confidently is they're not going to make the president's deadline of getting this on his desk by Memorial Day, because we've only got a week left.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. And with so, you know, the more, you know how it is, like the more you mess with stuff, sometimes the worse it gets. So at this point, and I think the other part that's confusing that we really didn't touch on, you know, also involves rules of just how you pass stuff, but the 4.5 trillion.
I got to be honest, I don't understand Senate rules. So
yeah, the rules are kind of weird, but the 4.5 trillion in quote tax cuts, the thing that I think is never made clear in, well, there are many things in media that are not made clear, but one of the things that's really important, I think, for people to grasp is that 4.5 trillion is currently not going into the Treasury. It was what they considered to be the tax cut in 2017. The problem is, in order to reauthorize it, we have to now pretend like we are cutting 4.5 trillion, because if we don't reauthorize the tax bill from 2017, that money would come into the Treasury. Therefore, you have to treat it like it is being currently cut. And that's why other things have to be subtracted in order for it to continue forward. It's a procedural thing, but it's important.
You really want to get your mind blown. I'll try to explain this the best I can. The House is doing exactly what you said. They're using what's called the current law baseline, which is to say the scores that they're using assume that all of the Trump tax cuts expire on January 1st, and therefore extending exactly the tax code the way we have it now costs, you know, $4 trillion plus. And that's kind of how they're doing it in the House side. The Senate did not do that. For the Senate scoring purposes, they said, we're going to use what's called the current policy baseline. So assume that extending everything the way we have it right now is zero. And then they created an additional instruction to do more tax cuts on top of that for another $2 trillion. And so the Senate actually has a much bigger, in practice, tax instruction, even though it looks smaller because it says $2 trillion and the House one says $4.5 trillion. It's actually bigger because they used a different baseline. They used the current policy baseline. The Senate also, this is the other thing that's so crazy about the way, you normally, when a budget passes both the House and Senate, you think that means that they agreed, right? If for it to pass, you would think, oh, they've agreed on how much to cut spending, how much to cut taxes. There's no agreement at all in this, because not only did they use different numbers and different scoring methods for the tax part of the bill, but they use totally different numbers for the spending parts of the bill, for the committees that are doing the spending reductions. The House has spending reduction instructions to their committees that total $1.5 trillion, trillion with a T. Now, that's over 10 years, so it's almost nothing, because it's over 10 years where they're going to have, you know, 80 or 90 trillion in spending. And so it's like a less than 2% decrease in spending, but it's something. The Senate committee instructions, they've got $4 billion with a B, which is basically zero in the federal budget.
Yeah, really.
You know, when you're talking about $4 billion in spending cuts over 10 years is essentially zero. And so the Senate instructions on spending have basically no spending cuts at all. Actually have net spending increases, because they've got increases for things like border and defense, and the committees that do have decreases, it's nothing. It's four committees that have $1 billion in decreases each. And so we've got this really weird situation where the House is doing this enormous amount of work to meet the instructions of the budget resolution, and the Senate has totally different instructions. And the Senate might ignore the House bill and just do their own thing, or, you know, it's you know, the difficult decisions have sort of been postponed. Instead of being resolved in the budget, they sort of postponed them by putting different instructions for the House and for the Senate. And so I'm hoping that we'll see this clear the House very shortly. They're pretty close. They probably need a couple of deals here to get it past the line. But clearing the House in this instance means a lot less than it usually does because of how big the differences are between the House and Senate right now.
Yeah. Well, the good part is if they can get this through, solidify the tax cuts, then we've taken the sword of Damocles off of everybody in taxpayer land, and then we can go after a bunch of other stuff. But
well, the sooner they can get it done, the better. The sooner they can get it done, the better. Look, I mean, one of the big problems with the Trump tax bill in 2017 is they didn't get it done until, you know, the last week of December.
Right.
With the threat of missing Christmas, what finally got Congress and kind of to get their act together and get it finished. We cannot afford for that to happen this year because it gets us way too close to that massive multi-trillion dollar tax hike coming at the end of the year. And, you know, if they don't get this cleared and resolved sooner in the year rather than later, there's going to be a huge amount of economic activity that just moves to the sidelines while companies and individuals are sort of saying, wait a second, let me see what my taxes are going to be next year before I make a decision on this. And that will be very damaging to the economy. And, of course, that economic damage and delaying the upside of the new tax cuts as well, you know, that would be very bad for Republicans politically because it means that whatever the benefits are not going to be felt before the election next year. And so they really need to figure out how to get on the same page and get this done sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And at some point, you know, it when you have slim majorities in both the House and the Senate, reconciliation is a great tool, but we can't afford to hang ourselves on perfection and then fumble the ball. I guess I kind of look at that. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's always been the big problem is you have certain members that just want a perfect bill and it holds the whole thing up. It's not going to be perfect. Hopefully it'll
be. It's going to be big and beautiful, but perfect isn't in the name, right?
No, that's right.
The OBBB, the one big beautiful bill, or as I like to call it, the O-baby.
Well, that's the thing, and then we can move to. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on, but we need out here. We need the guy that's the appointee for Fish and Wildlife. We need that guy in the chair so we can get so we can deal with the wolves out here. So there are things that don't potentially affect the rest of the country, but it's stuff that regular people in regular America do need to have done. So.
Oh, absolutely. The Senate still has a lot of nominees they need to clear, including my friend Casey Mulligan, who's going to be kind of the regulatory czar at the Small Business Administration. He's been waiting for his confirmation, and that's, you know, I need him confirmed in his new job because I use his numbers all the time. So it's like, I mean, you know, if he's leaving the University of Chicago for the Trump administration, they got to get that done.
Yeah.
So he can start publishing again.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of other stuff that exists outside of the, you know, it exists outside of the normal, you know, everyday stuff. It's hanging up everything. So I'm kind of hoping that we can make that happen and get it done in a timely fashion. Well, we still care about it, right? And you know, the other part of it, God, it would shut. Well. I don't know. This is probably a big wish, but maybe it would shut these guys up on the Social Security, Medicare thing, and all that. I don't know how many times they can tell everybody.
Well, the Democrats like to lie. They love to lie. I mean, it's amazing. So you can't. Here's the thing: they're going to accuse you of doing all these horrible things regardless.
So that's true.
Just do the best policy you can. This is what I say. I mean, I, you know, when the Senate earlier in the year was trying to do this strategy, doing two different bills, and they said we're going to do border and defense, and then we're going to do tax later in the year. They actually did a budget that had zero tax provisions at all, and it ended up going nowhere because the House didn't take it up. But they did a budget with literally zero tax provisions of any kind, and yet every Democrat speech about it was this tax cuts for billionaires.
Yeah.
It literally did not have a tax instruction in the budget.
Right.
And they used the talking point anyway.
Right. Well, and the words Social Security aren't in there. You know,
they just say what they're going to say. It doesn't matter. It
no.
Has no. They don't care whether it has any basis in reality. And so if that's the kind of opponents that you're dealing with, do not let them affect you.
Right.
Do not let them affect you or prevent you from doing the best bill you can do. That's what I've been telling these guys.
Yeah, exactly. And as a, you know, for the public, I mean, demand receipts. You know, when these guys tell you over and over and over that they're cutting something and it never happens, you know, we used to say, you know, crying wolf, right, when we were kids. Is that an outdated expression? Is there a new one? Because that's
yeah, you know, one of the things that drives me nuts is, we, you know, when they did a version of this bill that had a bunch of Medicaid reforms in it, which, as I said, they basically backed off of at this point, Medicaid spending still went up every single year. It just didn't go up as much as the Democrats wanted it to, and yet with it going up every single year. They say, oh, vicious cuts.
Right.
Most severe cuts. You're like, what are you talking
about? You're high again.
Yeah. Incredible.
Phil Kirpin, we have talked fast, but not fast enough. We have to go now.
All right.
We can't wait to see you again on our airwaves. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
KCNR Shasta Redding.